From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. You have made it. That's right. It is Friday, moments away from the weekend. Oh, boy, I can't believe it's already Friday. Time flies when you're having fun. And, of course, we have been having a grand old time here on WKAR AM 870 on Current Sports. It's been a great week, and we plan on closing it out with a shebang-a-bang. That's right. On today's show, we will talk about the Golden State Warriors, who became only the second team in NBA history to reach 70 wins in the regular season. How about that? Hats off to Dub Nation. We will talk about whether or not the Warriors will break that famed Chicago Bulls record from the 90s and eclipse a 72-win season. Three games remaining for the Warriors. We'll chat about that. We will also invite Current Sports production assistant Jason Ruff to the show. 2 minutes for Ruffing. We'll talk some hockey, and we'll weigh all of the scenarios that would put the Detroit Red Wings into the playoffs. A tough, tough loss for the Wings last night. We will also talk about the Detroit Pistons, who are one win away from the NBA playoffs. Also, on the back end of the show, we will give you a live update of the Masters, which are taking place right now. Actually, the leader right now, the guy who's leading the pack, Jordan Spieth, has just teed off. We'll give you an update on what Jordan is doing, and we will reflect on this Reflection Friday. Call in to be a part of today's show. You know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You know what's next. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. All right, folks, how about Mr. Javon Haynes? That's right, Javon Haynes of the Lansing Community College men's basketball team has been named an All-American by the National Junior College Athletic Association Division II. Haynes, an East Lansing graduate, averaged 5.9 rebounds, 4 assists, and shot 46.8% from the field and 79.1% from the free throw line for the Stars this year. Congratulations to Haynes. It was a joy watching him in college, and it's even a bigger joy seeing what he is doing with Lansing Community College. He is fun to watch, folks. All right, the Lansing Lugnuts home opener. Yeah, they had to cancel it, folks. It was postponed yesterday due to weather. This weather is killing me, Smalls. The Luggies will play the game today as a part of a doubleheader at Cooley Law School Stadium in a pair of seven-inning contests, the first game starting at 6.05 p.m. And we are slated to get snow later on today, so I will be shocked if even that one gets in. Right now, it's looking beautiful, even though it's a bit nippy, but at least the sun is out. All right, the Detroit Tigers, opening day is today. How about that? Detroit, they host the New York Yankees. The Yankees sitting at 2-1. The Detroit Tigers sitting at 2-0. The first pitch is scheduled for 1:10 p.m. That's right, 7 minutes from right now as the Tigers look to extend their record to 3-0 on the year. We'll be giving you a live update of that one as well. The Detroit Red Wings had an open door to the playoffs, but they refused to walk in the room. Detroit fell to the Boston Bruins last night in an ugly 5-2 loss. It was a big win for Boston, who is now tied with the D with 93 points in the East. Detroit, Boston, and Philly all eyeing the last two playoff spots available in the East. Now, the Red Wings can clinch a berth tonight, or tomorrow night, I should say, with a win against New York, and we will, of course, break down all of the possible scenarios that will put the Red Wings in the playoffs, again, with our one and only Jason Ruff. You don't want to miss that. All right, the Detroit Pistons, they take on the Washington Wizards tonight in hoops action. The Pistons have been rocky in their last six games while trying to lock up a playoff spot, going 3-for-3 after a five-game winning streak. Now, the Pistons can clinch their first playoff berth since the 2007-2008 year. That was my freshman year in college. Are you kidding me? 7 years, folks, with the win tonight. The Wizards destroyed the Pistons in their most recent meeting after the All-Star break, 124-81, in the Pistons' worst defeat of the season. Tip time is set for 7:30 p.m. The Golden State Warriors became just the second team in NBA history to hit 70 wins with a 112-101 victory at home yesterday against the San Antonio Spurs. The Warriors are still chasing the 95-96 Chicago Bulls record for the best season ever at 72-10. The Warriors, now 70-9, have a chance to beat the record but must win out in the last three games of the year. The Warriors take on the Memphis Grizzlies tomorrow night on the road at 8 p.m. in their quest for history. Former Lions wide receiver Calvin Johnson mentioned to a teammate last fall that this will be his last year. It was done in such a nonchalant way, however, that one of his teammates thought it was a joke, actually. Lions wide receiver Corey Fuller spoke about the realization on Thursday when he joined Lions president Rod Wood and others during an appearance at Boysville Gym to donate weight room equipment to the Detroit Police Athletic League. Quote, it was actually the way he said it. It was a joke, like, yeah, it might happen. I'm like, yeah, it's not. Shut up. And then having heard about it then, and then he finally came out after the season and talked about it. End quote. Again, that's from Lions wide receiver Corey Fuller addressing when Megatron mentioned to him that he may retire. But Fuller said Johnson mentioned retirement casually to him and, quote, a small group of people inside the locker room. Quote, not like, hey, guys, I got to tell you something. Just talking. And I think for him, it was the best decision he made for himself. And speaking of the Detroit Lions, the Lions preseason schedule has been released, and it includes three AFC North opponents. The Lions will play at Pittsburgh versus Cincinnati at home, at Baltimore, and Buffalo at home as well. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Call in to be a part of today's show. Again, the number is 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You've probably got it on speed dial by now. You can also go to facebook.com/currentsports and tweet me at AlMartinWKR. Here we go.
Here's what we do in cases when there is a lot of pressure. So you just go like, ta ta da.
That's it.
And when there is a lot of pressure, okay, just keep doing that. Ready? Ta ta da. Just keep doing that. Look at you. You have moves. Ooh. Ooh. And then I just go around, ooh, right? Ta ta da. Ta ta da. And then I do a dip.
Ooh.
You're probably sitting back, maxing, taxing, and relaxing in the friendly confines of your house or in your cubicle at work or even driving and saying to yourself, what in the world was that? That was actually a snippet that is more suitable for your eyes than for radio of Tom Izzo, the head coach of the Michigan State men's basketball team, actually on the show Dancing with the Stars. I kid you not, folks. Yes, you got to see this video. If you haven't checked it out, I was actually sitting back prepping for work on this Friday. And I was sitting back and I was watching television. And all of a sudden, I had Channel 6 News on. And Fred Heumann, he was anchoring. And he actually showed some video of Izzo in a dance hall alongside his player, now former player, I should say, Denzel Valentine. Yeah, I don't know how they hooked this up, but actually Izzo and Valentine are actually in California getting ready for the John R. Wooden Awards. And during the whole preparation for that, they found some time to actually link up with Dancing with the Stars dancers Artem Chisneviv and Itya Silowitska. I probably just butchered both of those names, but they linked up with both of those dancers, and they had a cool feature where you see Valentine right next to Tom Izzo. And Izzo is trying to get down like a simple two-step. And he's really, really struggling. Really struggling. I must say, Tom Izzo, he's not a dancer. You know, he's definitely a basketball coach. But hey, mad props for Tom Izzo for even getting out there and trying it, okay? So that's a feature that will actually air Friday. So tonight. Tonight at 8 p.m. as a part of the College Basketball Awards, which can be seen on ESPN2. And absolutely hilarious. Now, Denzel Valentine, I mean, he nails it. Denzel, I mean, I've been watching that kid dance since his days at Lansing Sex in high school. So he was certainly in his element during that small snippet. But it was hilarious watching Izzo. I mean, he had a grin. He had a grin on ear to ear, folks, from ear to ear. That was absolutely priceless. You have to really appreciate when athletes or coaches can just be themselves and show a bit of their personality. And Izzo, you know, he's known for being on the sidelines and absolutely losing his mind. He's known to be a fierce competitor, but he's one of the nicest guys you will meet in your life, all right? So thank you for time, Izzo. I wanted to start Friday's show with that because we have a lot of fun each and every Friday here on the show. The weekend is near. Everybody's in a good mood, I hope. And we plan on making it better as we indulge in sports talk throughout this hour. Of course, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I must say, folks, you must also be celebrating because, hey, it is Detroit Tigers opening day at Comerica Park, downtown Detroit. Right now, the first pitch has actually just been thrown. That was set for actually 1:10 p.m. It is now 1:11 p.m. And I know many people. I was actually looking at my Snapchat from some of my homies who still live back in the D. And they were absolutely going insane in the membrane, getting their buzz on before attending the Detroit Tigers and New York Yankees game. And, you know, opening day, such a rich tradition. You know, unfortunately for me, I have never been to a Detroit Tigers opening day, and Jason Ruff is looking at me like, are you kidding me, Al? Yeah, I've never been because it always falls during the week. You know, I'm productive during the week, all right? I'm either working, talking to you good people, or back when I was in college, I always had a class during opening day. Now, I will say, it is a Friday, and you guys know how students do it at Michigan State University, all right? I don't know any students who have classes on Fridays, all right? Even when I was at Michigan State, I mean, what, the weekend, Isaac, what, starts like on Thursday night?
Sometimes Wednesday night for
people.
Yeah,
like if you don't have Thursday, like I know many students that don't even have Thursday classes, so they get like a four-day weekend. So I'm pretty sure many students right now are downtown Detroit enjoying the festivities down there. I was actually driving around yesterday, and I was listening to the radio, and they had the manager of Chelly's on the show. I forget what radio show it was, but she was talking about how the bars around downtown Detroit are just prepping and trying to get everything just set in place for the madness that is Detroit Tigers opening day. And many of the bars actually open at 6 a.m. Are you kidding me? 6 a.m.? That's how early people are starting to get their buzz on down at Comerica Park? That's crazy, isn't it?
That is crazy. And we've got some current sports interns going down to Detroit today.
Who do we have?
Mike Masson is actually over in the D. I ran into him yesterday. Well, you know, I texted
That's
you. I was working on
work.
My shot, and right. I was still trying to get back from this darn sprained ankle, but I was working on my shot, and I saw him leaving IM West.
What?
So
wow.
He said he was going down to the D tomorrow for opening day, do a little bit of pregame tailgating, even though he doesn't have tickets to the game.
Dig that. Yeah, just being down there in the atmosphere. I mean, Tigers opening day is one of those events where you just see downtown Detroit just liven up. I mean, it's so cool. You know, the atmosphere down there is unlike any other. It's just really, really cool to see people excited downtown Detroit and doing it in a safe manner. All right. I know it's going to be a lot of liquor consumed. Please celebrate responsibly. All right. So the Detroit Tigers, again, 1:10 p.m. That game is just getting underway. And the starting pitchers for that matchup, right-handed pitcher Jordan Zimmermann takes the mound against the Yankees right-handed pitcher, Luis Severino. So, you know, and it's going to be a lot of people down there. Again, celebrate responsibly. It is going to be a crazy atmosphere, and I see why Mike isn't working today, I guess. He's just enjoying the hype down there. So
can't blame him.
Yeah, can't blame him for that. Also, want to give you guys a quick update on the Masters right now. Now, you know, again, round one just wrapped up, and this is how the leaderboard looks like right now. And Jordan Spieth had a remarkable first round. He shot a six under, which was one of the best rounds for a first rounds for a defending champion in the Masters tournament. And today, through one hole, the dude already has birdied the first hole. So he's sitting at 7 under. Sergio Garcia is in second place at 4 under. Then you have Justin Rose, Danny Lee, Scott Piercy, Paul Casey. They are all tied for third place at 3 under. So, heck of a start for Jordan Spieth. Is he good or what? And I will have to say this, because after we got off the airwaves yesterday's show, I saw this update flash on my phone. It was an ESPN Score Center update, and it wasn't good news, all right? And the man, the brother, looked like me out there on an average weekend at Eagle Eye, all right? Ernie Els, he had a tough start to the Masters yesterday. He actually six-putted. I kid you not, folks. Ernie Els made a dubious Masters history in the opening round by scoring a nine, folks, on the par four first hole. It's the highest in 80 years of the tournament. Oh, that was ugly. Yeah. Thank you, Isaac. Yeah, it actually marked the 23rd six-putt or worse in stroke play events on the PGA Tour since 1992, according to ESPN stats and information. The last six-putt on tour was Graham DeLate at the 2014 Open Championship in Royal Liverpool. So I certainly fed for Ernie Els, and I'm an avid golfer. Golf next to basketball is my second favorite hobby, Isaac. And I did, you know, in a sick way, I felt good watching that, because it let me know that I'm not alone in the world. I'm not one of those guys who just has a bad day on the golf course. It felt kind of good seeing a professional struggle like that. I mean, I feel for you, Ernie, but for us average golfers who are just trying to find our way on the golf course, yeah, it let us know that it reassured me that everybody's human, all right?
And I dig that. Every bad thing needs a sour cherry on top. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like after last year's Ohio State MSU game, I woke up early, I went to game day, it was muddy, it was rainy, it was horrible weather. Mm-hmm. And then, to compound all of that, you go to the game, it's snowing, we lose. And then I say we as a Spartan fan, because I was not in the reporting business just yet.
Right, okay.
And I get back from the game, I'm like, well, at least LSU beat Alabama. That's important. That is important. That's close to my heart. And LSU blew a 3-point lead with 47 seconds left.
Yeah.
So that made it worse. And then we ordered a pizza late at night, and it never came. That was the sour cherry on top.
It happens.
So for Ernie, it was just that one-handed putt, like, fine, I'll just do this. And that didn't even go in for him. That was the sour cherry.
Yeah, I really fell for Ernie, too. I mean, my goodness. On the first hole, that's how you start your Masters? Oh, that's tough stuff. All right, folks. Well, I tell you what, I was up pretty late last night, and like I always am, to be honest with you, it was a long day for me. I invited Isaac out yesterday to the Breslin. Actually, a former current sports production assistant who plays for the Michigan State women's basketball scout team, Darren Weiss, he hit me up because he knows I'm an avid, you know, pickup basketball player, and he hit me up and said, "Hey, Al, the Breslin Center is open tomorrow. We've got a few players coming through. About 10 to 12 of us. Do you want to play some pickup ball at the Brez?" Of course, you have to be crazy to turn that down, right? Barring an injury like Isaac's. Because Isaac, you sprained your ankle not too long ago.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, about a
week and a half, yeah.
And that was a badly sprained ankle. I mean, you showed me your ankle, dude, and it was like a golf ball was inside of your ankle. It was that bad. So
getting ready for Master season.
Yeah, exactly, right? And I invited you out, and you just couldn't go. You went out, I believe, to IM West, as you had mentioned, and you tried to go, but you couldn't go. I mean, and I tell you what, I walk in the gym, and I'm with my homeboy, Taylor. Taylor is from Lansing, and he's in town for 2 weeks. So I hit up Taylor, and we walked in the door. And look, who do we see? We see Jasmine Hines, Lexi Gussert, and also Tori Jankowska out there playing pickup ball. So immediately, I start smiling, like, okay. These are like small moments that, as a former basketball player, I live for.
You relish it.
Yeah, I relish it because, you know, I'm one of those guys, you know, that said, oh, yeah, I woulda, coulda, shoulda did this. You know, I coulda played college ball. I'm one of those guys who live in the past when it comes to their former athletic dreams. And I always felt that I could run with anybody on a basketball court. So again, this is the MSU women's basketball team. These are players that have certainly made their mark on the program, especially when you talk about, you know, with Tori Jankowska, who's the starting guard of the team and will be next year, and Jasmine Hines, who left a storied legacy at the program. So I'm like, you know what? This is a test. Game time, Al Jordan, lace up the sneakers. So that's what I did. You know, we went out there, and I'm confident, and, you know, I'm going out there, and I had a solid game. I actually, and I this is a kind of a gold star for me on the week, all right? Myself, Taylor, and Darren, because Darren, they were all three of them, they were on my team for all four games that we played. We put Tori Jankowska off the court, not once, but twice. So I felt good about that. And I averaged about 5 points per game, which was pretty good.
Very solid, yeah.
It was solid, man. It was a good outing. And I tell you what, though, that men's, because we were in the men's basketball practice gym, that gym is like a sauna. Like, dude, it is so hot. I mean, I have asthma as well. It started messing with my asthma a little bit. I had to take two puffs of the inhaler, dude. It was crazy. But it was a fun time. No, we'll be back at it next week. That's going to become like a regular thing now. So you got to come with us next week, Isaac.
Oh, you can bet on that. Yeah, I mean, that's just another line for your resume. Because I know what you mean. When you get done with the competitive level of sports, like I did in high school,
right,
you savor any possible second where you can relive that. Just a second. It's so natural for that nostalgia to creep back in.
That is very, very true. All right, well, let's transition now. Let's talk some hockey, folks. There are many scenarios that can fall in place for the Detroit Red Wings to make the playoffs. Now, before I invite the man, Jason Ruff, to sort of break down this whole scenario for the Detroit Red Wings, I want to throw out what the scenarios are right now. Now, the Wings can make the playoffs if they win in regulation or overtime. That would mean that they would clinch third place in the Atlantic Division and set up a first-round series against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Also, it would get the Wings to 95 points and 40 regulation or overtime victories, which is the first tiebreaker. Now, even if the Boston Bruins win the season finale tomorrow against the Ottawa Senators at home, the Wings would get to 95 points. Well, excuse me, the Bruins could get to 95 points, but can't go higher than 39 regulation or overtime victory. So that's very important when discussing that, okay? Now, if the Wings get 1 point to reach 94 points and the Flyers lose to Pittsburgh, there's a lot of scenarios here. The Wings make the playoffs because they have the ROW tiebreaker. Again, ROW means regulation or overtime victories. They have the ROW tiebreaker on the Flyers. If the Wings lose, they would get in. If Boston loses, or if the Flyers end on a losing streak against the Penguins and Islanders. Where you're writing all of that down, I'm pretty sure it went over your head. So to clarify all of that jazz and so much more, we're going to hit you now with 2 minutes for Ruffing with the one, the only, Mr. Jason Ruff.
Detroit penalty number 52, 2 minutes for Ruffing.
Oh, my God. That's unbelievable.
All right, here we go. My man Jason Ruff is into his house. JR, how you doing?
Good. What a crazy quagmire the Wings have gotten themselves into. Had they just taken care of business last night, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. We'd be talking, well, Wings are in the playoffs, the streak continues, but no.
Right.
The Boston came out, saw what they had to do, and did work.
Now, you just heard me riddle through
all the scenarios.
The numerous scenarios here, Jason. Can you sort of dumb this down for us?
I'll try.
Yeah, please do. Clear, because I kind of went through, you know, I had never heard, I'm not the biggest hockey fan, but I've never heard of ROW, you know, regulation or overtime victories. I didn't even know that was the acronym for it.
The league got weird a few years ago with the realignment. I'm just trying to figure this out. I remember back when if you were in the top eight of the conference you were in, no matter what your division was.
That's
but
it.
Regardless of that,
so can
here's
you
the situation.
This for
here's the situation. The Red Wings and the Bruins are tied with 93 points these. Al, there's two playoff spots fighting for, three teams trying to get into it. Mm. So right off the bat, the odds are good for the Red Wings. Detroit and Boston, as long as they are tied, even if the Wings lose tomorrow night, if Boston loses, they're still in. Because, like you said, they hold the first tiebreaker, regular overtime victories. Mm. The only thing that could make, if Detroit loses and Boston wins in regulation, so if Boston bunny hops Detroit, then it's all out of the Wings' hands. They could still make the playoffs, but they need to be the biggest Pittsburgh and New York Islanders fans ever and hope that Philadelphia doesn't match them up, because Philadelphia, as of right now, is only 1 point behind the Wings with 92.
So, gotta ask, Jason, when evaluating all those scenarios, what do you think is the most realistic one?
I think the Red Wings get in by the skin of their teeth. That game, that's going to be a toss-up game between the Rangers and Detroit. You know, New York's been looking pretty good. They've got the first wild card locked in. Boston against Ottawa, Bruins should handle that one easy. I think the Bruins are going to make the playoffs. I think Detroit's going to get in the playoffs by virtue of two factors. Mm-hmm. One, their win against Philadelphia. And two, the fact that Philadelphia has been so wildly inconsistent, the fact they have a tough schedule. They play Pittsburgh and the New York Islanders. Those are two tough teams for Philadelphia, who couldn't even beat the Leafs, for crying out loud. They came back, tied the Leafs, forced overtime to get a point, but then lost in overtime. They couldn't get the final dub and force this into a three-way tie and make this even more interesting.
Right, exactly.
So I think Philadelphia will, at best case scenario, get 2 points out of their remaining two games. It's also important to remember, Detroit and Boston only have one game left in the season. Philadelphia has two, so the Philadelphia has a better opportunity, but they've got two really tough games, so it kind of balances each other out, in my opinion. I think Philadelphia only gets 2 points in that regard. So I think Detroit will make the playoffs, barely.
They'll make it, but barely. By the skin of their chinny chin chin. All right. Now, Jason, again, to sort of summarize all of that, again, if the Wings beat the Rangers in regulation or overtime,
they're in.
The Wings will finish third in the Atlantic Division and set up a first-round series against the Tampa Bay Lightning. If the Wings lose, again, they can still get in if the Bruins lose their last game or if the Flyers finish on a losing streak.
Right.
And the Wings can also clinch if they get a point and the Flyers lose on Saturday.
Right. If Detroit doesn't win, it's out of their hands.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And
all right,
as you know, I'm sure as a former athlete in high school, I know as a former hockey player in high school, you want to have your destiny in your own hands. That's
very,
true
very
in
true.
Any sport, not just hockey.
They control it right now. So, but it was a bad loss.
Bad loss
last night for the Wings. I got a chance to check out a bit of that game in preparation for this conversation. Now, a 5-2 was the final of that game last night, Jason. Do you think the Wings were just a victim of a back-to-back hangover when looking at what took place yesterday?
I think that's a possibility. You also have to look at the fact the Wings have not been consistent as they traditionally have. You know, a lot of people have been pointing towards Blashill. They've been pointing towards the youth as the reason for that. There are a multitude of reasons here, and we don't have time to get into all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was a combination of the Wings not being in the right frame of mind and Boston realizing that this was likely a must-win game for them in order to keep their playoff hopes alive. Remember, it was in Boston, and
right,
they played well.
They did.
In TD Garden.
They certainly did. And you know, you have an interesting conversation here that has been debated in the last few weeks when it comes to the man in net. Jimmy Howard Peter Mrazek. Now, it's so interesting because you and I were chatting before today's show, Jason. And it's like this year has flip-flopped, because last year you saw, Howard be the guy. Then Mrazek gets hot and they throw him in and he ends the season.
Right.
This year, Mrazek is the guy. Then Jimmy Howard comes in and Jimmy Howard has really had the hot hand for the Wings as of late. Going into that game last night, Jimmy Howard, he had actually won the Wings, six of his last seven starts.
Yeah, so he was very good. I think if you're asking me who
do you go with? That's a simple question here.
I think that depends. When did Mrazek come in? After the fifth goal?
Right. Mrazek last night, came watching that game last night, Mrazek actually relieved Howard after the fifth goal in that game.
I think you stick with Howard. He's won you six out of the last seven. You give him a chance to get redemption. If you go with Mrazek, you're basically saying, or what I think Blasha would be basically saying, is yes, you're kind of going off an edge. Yes, Mrazek didn't allow any more goals, but at the same time, he hasn't played in a while and he's coming off injury. If I'm Blasha, I play it safe. I go with Howard, the man who's been a staple here in Detroit for a long time. That's who I go with.
Right, and you know, Peter Mrazek did relieve Howard after the fifth goal, but that was really to get Mrazek some work and Howard some rest, I believe.
Yeah,
because Howard right
for
now,
sure,
I think he is still the clear choice going into Saturday at New York, where he really played his best game of the season, I believe, back in like February 21st.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
Howard has had great success against New York, and I think that he is the guy going into Saturday. The question is, this is the thing about when you discuss it, dynamics between which goalie to start, if both of them have had pretty solid outings.
Million dynamics.
You always have to go with the hot hand, and that's clearly Howard right now.
Exactly. Like, looking back, drawing another parallel, Michigan State was out in Penn State. They got their doors blown off of them in Happy Valley the first night. Tom Anastas puts in the rookie, Ed Minnie, Pennsylvania native. I think that actually played a large part. Michigan State let in two goals in their first two shots on net.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And Ed Minnie came out, Hildebrand came back in. So there's so much. Being a goalie, I always say they're an endangered species. Because
right.
You have to be certifiably insane, in my opinion, to play goaltender.
Right.
I mean, because you have little hard pieces of rubber flying at you 100 miles an hour, night in and night out.
You got to be tough, man. That's hockey. You got to be
tough. It's crazy. There's so many, you know, mental and physical aspects that go into, like, which goaltender do you start. It's a tough conversation to have, but I really think in this situation, I think you go with Howard.
So I have to know, Jason, how short should the leash be if Howard is mucking it up come playoff time?
In playoffs, I think it should be fairly short if Mrazek is 110%.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to have a goaltender controversy. Traditional thinking is you don't want to have a goaltender controversy in the playoffs. But as the Blackhawks showed last year, you can pull your goalie out, put a new one back in, have him ride you for a little while, and have your starter calm down, put your starter back in, and he's good to go. Happened with the Blackhawks in the first round last year against the Nashville Predators, I believe.
So true. All right, so let's break down. Okay, if the Wings do make the playoffs here, let's say the Wings top the Rangers. They finish third in the Atlantic Division. And again, as
they
They take care of business. That would set up a first-round series against the Tampa Bay Lightning. What will that matchup look like?
That'll be a very tough matchup. Tampa Bay has a lot of young talent, although there has been some controversy, especially with their main guy, Stamkos. Rumors of him not being good in the locker room, wanting to leave. I still think Tampa Bay takes that series in five or six. I don't think the Wings are consistent enough to win a seven-game series, even if they do make the playoffs.
What are the holes in the boat for the Wings in that matchup?
I think it's mostly consistency. Getting, you know, some nights your offense is good. Goaltending has been an issue, especially, like you said, if the leash, I think, is pretty short in playoff time with Jimmy Howard. So it's getting all those combination of things to work together. It's kind of like what Michigan State had trouble with this year, to be totally honest with you.
Right.
Some nights you'd have the offense going, but they'd be letting in. The defense be like Swiss cheese. The next night, the defense be like a brick wall, but they can't score to save their lives. It's all about consistency, I feel, with this team.
Jason, who is your favorite to win the whole thing? Who will raise Lord Stanley?
I can't give you a firm prediction, so I'm going to give you a top four. I'm going to give you two teams from each division.
Okay.
Here. Because there's just so much craziness parody in the league. In the East, I like Pittsburgh and Florida. Not Washington, who is leading the entire pack in the National Hockey League. I don't know if you've ever heard of the curse of Ovechkin.
I think I have.
Washington has never made it out of the second round. They never will, as long as Alexander Ovechkin is there in Washington. The Capitals will always do well in the regular season, but they will never make it out of the second round. And
okay,
I still believe that'll hold true. The West, though, is a different story. You've heard the term the Wild Wild West. It is the Wild Wild West. There's so many good teams. I like Dallas coming out of that one. And my second team, I've been debating this all afternoon. I got to go with Los Angeles. I can't bring my Hawks into this one. They've just been too inconsistent on the back end. I think part of that is their holes they have. Duncan Keith still serving that suspension. I believe Brett Seabrook still isn't 100%. They've had issues on the back end. And the other thing, I can't go with St. Louis because I'm convinced that a St. Louis-Chicago matchup will happen in that playoffs, and I like Chicago out of that one.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a bloodbath.
Right.
I tell you what, because you look at the history of those two programs, ooh, there's some bad blood there.
Now, putting my finger on the pulse of what has transpired this year for the Wings, again, I do believe they are going to make the playoffs, barring a catastrophe here. But, again, they're just getting in, just sneaking in here. I got to know, Jason, because they're, you know, again, putting my finger on the pulse of Red Wings fans here. They're not happy with the Wings just getting in. This is a storied franchise. This is hockey town, quote unquote. What needs to happen in the offseason in order to ensure that the Wings are better off than where they are right now?
I don't pretend to be an expert in this area, but I think the Wings need to focus on the future. I think they need to really invest in their draft picks, draft well. You know, you have a really good farm system in Grand Rapids. Bring some of those guys up. I mean, hell, you brought up your coach from Grand Rapids. Why not do the same thing with your players? You know, there have been rumors running around that Datsyuk may leave at the end of the season. However true that is, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, you've got a lot of players on that wing squad that are really showing their age. And so I think you kind of need to start shoving them out and edging them towards retirement and really focusing on rebuilding for the future. Basically do what, in essence, Tampa Bay did. You know, they drafted well. They focused on youth. Look at last year. They were one of the hottest teams in the National Hockey League, made all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. There's no reason the Red Wings can't do that. So that's where I think the Red Wings need to start looking towards. They need to start building towards the future instead of trying to reinforce what they have. I think they really need to kind of go into a little bit of a rebuilding mode. And yes, that may mean the end of the playoff streak after a while, but assuming they get in this year, it'll be 25 years. I think Red Wings fans can afford a year or two off if it means a few more deep playoff runs.
Ooh, they don't like hearing that, Jason. All right. Call in, folks.
Sorry, folks.
Call in, folks. 517-355-9527. What do you think about the Wings getting into the playoffs, and how far do you think this team will go? 517-355-9527. Jason, what else do you got for us?
Here's the other thing. Final Frozen Four was last night. We have the national championship game is set. Mm-hmm. It will be the Quinnipiac Bobcats versus the North Dakota Fighting Hawks.
Wow. So
yeah, that's their new name. I'm just calling it NoDak. I'm just calling them NoDak. I don't. That's a ridiculous name. I'm not going with that.
So no one predicted those teams. No one saw those teams playing, and getting that far.
Actually, not so much. Quinnipiac was the number one team of the nation all throughout. North Dakota was flirted with number one. They were always in the top five. It's actually been a pretty traditional Frozen Four. There haven't been a lot of surprises, not a lot of small schools taking over. It's mostly been the traditional powers. You look at the Frozen Four, you had Quinnipiac against Boston College. Mm-hmm. You know, BC's probably one of the most recognizable name brands aside from North Dakota in college hockey. And then the other game, you had Denver versus North Dakota, which was an epic hockey game to watch. Really glad I caught that. And honestly, I think this is going to be a really fun national championship game tomorrow on my birthday. It's going to be an epic game to watch. Two high-flying offenses, two really skilled teams in the Bobcats and the NoDak.
Okay.
It'll be fun to watch.
Looking forward to that. And also have to note that UM's Kyle Connor may skate away with the Hobie Baker Award. He's said to become the third freshman ever, third Wolverine, to win the Player of the Year Award in college hockey. And that ceremony will take place on the NHL Network at 6 p.m. tonight, I believe.
Yeah, Kyle Connor would definitely be my choice for Hobie. You know, I understand people may be concerned that, you know, the Hobies are always just going to the best freshmen or whatnot. But, you know, these kids are really, really skilled. I mean, they're just outskilling everyone. So if I had to pick, my pick would be for Kyle Connor. He's just been a crazy good workhorse for the Wolverines. And if you're a Michigan State Spartan fan, you hope Winnipeg decides to offer him the big money and get him out of Ann Arbor.
Okay, all right. Well, that's been, what I want to say, about 10 minutes for roughing
with
Jason.
Man, that's a match penalty. That's a match penalty.
Exactly. Jason, how can folks out there follow your work, my friend?
On Twitter, at @Jason_R_rough, or at Impact Sports, Impact 89 FM, the only student radio station on campus.
My man, 50 grand. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, again, we're taking your calls. I know Ray is on the line. Ray wants to talk a little bit of Masters. Ray, stay on the line. We'll also talk about the Detroit Pistons and their playoff chances. Also, we will give you an update on the Masters and, of course, Tigers opening day at Comerica Park. That and more. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. I want to give you guys an update on round two of the Masters taking place, of course, at Augusta National, one of my favorite tournaments in all of sports. Right now, through two, Jordan Spieth still leads the pack at 7-under Right now, he is one under on the day. And then on his heels are Paul Casey, Justin Rose. Paul Casey is four under. Justin Rose is tied with two others, at three under. Danny Lee and Shane Lowry also in contention. So Jordan Spieth playing some fantastic golf right now. Let's take a few callers here. Again, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's go to line one right now. We've got Ray from Indiana. Ray, how are you doing, my friend?
Skipper!
How you been?
Hey, the Fox went on sale. He's 50% off. He's going to go to 70% off tomorrow. Have your buddy go to Cracker Barrel and get you a line dance thing so you guys can get a big kick out of it.
I tell you what, Ray has been talking about this dancing Fox. It has to be for over a year, I think, Isaac. And I have well over a year. And we have still not seen this dancing Fox that you are talking about at the Cracker Barrel, Ray.
Well, you got to ask them for it. They got it in the back room. You got to ask for the line dance.
Gotcha.
50% off today, 70% tomorrow. I'm going to go buy some in a minute. I'm real excited to buy some for the little children at the hospitals. But
that's beautiful. I know they appreciate that, Ray.
I know they do. I give God all the glory. Hey, that basketball, that was the greatest championship game I've ever seen.
You know what, Ray? Now that I've had a few days to process it, you know, you can legitimately make a case, and I ruffled some feathers with some of the PAs here when I made this statement, but you can legitimately make a case, Ray, that was the greatest basketball game. I'm talking about basketball game, period. Not just in college or the NBA, period. You can make a case that was the greatest basketball game ever played. When you really look at it, Ray, it was that good.
I know. Two shots are in the last 5 seconds. You can't beat that. Hey, that Spieth guy, I tell you, Tiger, I guess he's hitting drive, so he'll probably be ready for the U.S. Open, but I'll tell you what, this Spieth guy, he may end up being better than Nicklaus or Tiger.
He has a chance. I won't go that far because, again, watching Nicklaus and Tiger at their peak, I mean, my goodness, they were fantastic. But Spieth has all the potential in the world. This kid has nerves of steel. Nothing rattles him when he's out there. He's so confident. And one of the things I don't think gets talked about enough when you discuss what Jordan Spieth does out on the golf course is that he has such an imagination out there on the course, Ray. I mean, he has a vision that's unlike your normal golfer. I mean, he'll cut it between the trees. He'll see a small opening and just do something that you just don't normally see out of the golf bag, I should say. So, Jordan Spieth, he has all the potential in the world. I won't go that far just yet, Ray. But man, oh man, this kid is unbelievable.
He's only 21, 22.
He's
like
so
I said,
young.
People
right.
around about Tiger, I said. The only thing that can stop him is a woman in a car accident. Both of them happened to him. So, you know, they're still real young, you know, so you don't know what they're going to do. But I'll tell you, he's a heck of a putter, too.
Oh, that's probably the best part of his game, my man. I mean, he's money when it comes to reaching the green.
Remember what Sammy Sneed said, drive for show and you putt for dough.
That's right. that's one of the old adages in golf, my man.
Take care, buddy.
Thank you so much, Ray. Again, if you want to be a part of today's show, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. The Golden State Warriors, they have now wrapped up the number one seed in the Western Conference of the NBA. And Coach Steve Kerr said that he is leaning toward resting his players with three games left. Again, the Warriors are chasing that 95-96 Chicago Bulls record, the best record in NBA history at 72-10. If the Warriors win out and beat the Grizzlies and Spurs on the road, and then they finish up at home against the Grizzlies again next week, Wednesday, the Warriors can break that record and get to 73 wins. Now, again, you know, this is what Kerr had to say when it comes to resting his players. He's actually going to meet with his team. He said, quote, "We're going to talk about it tomorrow." And he goes on to say, quote, "We've been putting it off for as long as we were able to, which was until we got the number one seed. Now that we have that, I'm inclined to give some guys some rest if they need it. But I've sort of made a pact with the guys that if they are not banged up and they are not tired and if they want to go for this record or whatever, then so we got to talk about it." Isaac, what are your thoughts on this, my man? Because I tell you what, Kobe Bean Bryant, I love him, a legend in the game. Kobe weighed in on this, and he said, hey, if you got a chance to go after this record and make history, yeah, go after it. You know what I mean? That's the type of guy Kobe is. And I totally agree with him here.
Yeah, if the Warriors don't keep all of their starters in pretty constant rotation and go for this record, you can put me on one ankle, my sore ankle, against Steph Curry and let him cross me over all day long until it totally snaps in half. Because I'd be shocked if the Warriors don't go for this record. Knowing the players on this team, their demeanor, how much they just enjoy the regular season. They've made the regular season for the NBA, which is always fun for me. But most people say, okay, it drags on a little bit too long. The middle is boring. They've made this a blast. Why not finish it on a high note? I think they will. And I'd be shocked if they don't go for the record full-heartedly. So we'll see. But at the same time, knowing these players and hearing interviews with Steph Curry where he said he'd rather 73 wins than 400 threes, and the other players who say that this record's actually important to them, I'd be shocked if the Warriors don't try to get this.
Yeah, I will be very shocked as well. Again, when you got a chance to make history, I mean, this is one of those seasons that will be talked about for years, in decades, you look back at this and you make history like this. This is a team that we've talked about for ages, and I just think that when you have an opportunity and you don't, and if they were not to go after it, they'll look back and regret it, without a doubt. And they play the Grizzlies, they play the Spurs, and looking at their chances of winning out here, I really believe that. You know, especially when you look at last night's game, the Warriors pulled that out pretty easily. I was very shocked at the way they were able to handle the San Antonio Spurs. But, you know, Greg Popovich, he played his starters. He played all of his guys because Greg Pop believed that, you know, if they get the dub over the Warriors, they have a shot at possibly, which is so crazy. It just kind of puts into context just how good the seasons of both the Spurs and the Warriors have been. But, you know, if they get that win over the Warriors last night, I mean, they would have had possibly a shot at that number one seed. But now that it's so far out of reach, the Warriors clinched it with that win. Greg Pop has really no reason to play his superstars the next time the Warriors meet up on Sunday. It will be coming off a back-to-back when it comes to the Warriors. Again, they play the Grizzlies tomorrow. I just don't know. I don't see a big hurdle in the way now for the Warriors to lose one of these games. I don't know, maybe if the Grizzlies are feeling antsy one of those days. But against the Spurs, again, we probably won't see extended minutes when it comes to guys like Tony Parker, Kawhi Leonard, Greg Pop. We know how Greg Popovich operates. If they have nothing to play for, then why play your starter? So, I don't know, barring a catastrophe here. But again, heck, the Warriors have lost to teams like the Lakers, to teams like the Timberwolves. Who knows? But the path looks pretty easy for this team right now.
Well, the one thing that I do think that you have to take into serious account here is Greg Popovich, he can be a Grinch sometimes. I mean, he likes stealing awards away from players. He's a little bit of a grouch now and then. And one thing about Pop is during the All-Star game this year, Paul George, with a minute and a half remaining, was 2 points away from setting the All-Star game record for points in a game. Greg Popovich put in Draymond Green and Kawhi Leonard and double-teamed Paul George for the last 2 minutes of that entire game just so that PG didn't set the record. I think that's kind of funny, and I think that could actually play a part, just that personality factor in whether or not the Warriors get this record. Because don't forget, that last game, if I'm not mistaken, it's in San Antonio.
Yeah, it is in San Antonio because, the Warriors will play the Grizzlies and the Spurs on the road. Again, back-to-back for the Warriors Saturday and Sunday, and then they will wrap up the year on Wednesday against the Grizzlies. So what do you think? Do you think the Warriors are going to break the record? Call in 517-355-9527. Also, for the Detroit Pistons, the magic number is now down to just one game. The Pistons are clear of the fading Chicago Bulls at 39-40 after Thursday's loss to the Miami Heat. The Wizards could win out and tie the Pistons' record at the end of the season, but hey, That would put the Pistons in, I should say, because the Pistons do own the tiebreaker when evaluating both of those squads. Now, point guard John Wall, he missed Wednesday night's victory over the Brooklyn Nets with a bum knee, and they are done with one more loss. Now, and they have home dates with the Atlanta Hawks and Charlotte Hornets, two pretty good teams in the NBA right now, and two teams still fighting for playoff positioning. So I'm not worried about the Wizards here. I really think that the Pistons are going to handle business and get the job done tonight. And again, they already clinched The first winning record for the Pistons since 2007, 2008, which was a while ago. And if they do get into the playoffs and handle business tonight, which I expect they will do, the Pistons will make the playoffs for the first time since 2009. We have some breaking news that I'm sure is going to get a reaction from many of you out there. It certainly has gotten a reaction from me, trying to keep my composure reading it here. But let's hit the second break, and I'm going to bring that breaking news to you in just a second, all right? Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Well, this news broke within the hour, ladies and gents. Jim Harbaugh's satellite cap days have now come to a screeching halt. The NCAA announced today that the Division I Council has opted to approve a proposal originally brought forth by the ACC that bans football bowl subdivision teams from participating in satellite camps. Now, this change, per the NCAA, is effective immediately. And this is a statement that has been released concerning this issue. This is what the statement reads. Quote, the council approved a proposal applicable to the football bowl subdivision that will require those schools to conduct camps and clinics at their school's facilities or at facilities regularly used for practice or competition. Additionally, FBS coaches and non-coaching staff members with responsibility specific to football may be employed only at their school's camps or clinics. This rule change is effective immediately. Of course, the entire debate over satellite camps was pushed toward the front of the NCAA's line last summer after Harbaugh and his staff went on a massive swarm and camp tour during the month of June. Harbaugh and his staff visited camps in Alabama, Florida, Texas, Indiana, Pennsylvania, and California a year ago, and he had plans of going to Mississippi for yet another satellite camp. I tell you what, Jim Harbaugh, it was fun while it lasted. First off, I'm not surprised by this news because anytime you are rubbing some of the biggest names, biggest coaching names in college football the wrong way, and they are, you know, not happy about a big name like Jim Harbaugh recruiting, quote unquote, their players in their region to up north at U of M, you know, you're going to have a problem. You're going to have a problem. And the NCAA, you know, they didn't want any controversy here, and they know that if this continued, it was going to continually be a problem every single offseason, so they decided to nip it in the bud. Jim Harbaugh, though, hats off to him because, again, at the time, he wasn't breaking any rules here. He just found a loophole in the rules that allowed him to recruit non-traditional recruits at U of M, going down south, getting some of the best athletes coming out of high school in the entire nation and say, hey, why not come to Michigan? This is how we do it. We're going to put on a whole camp for you to show you how we do it. And it worked. It definitely worked. But man, you know, now it's not fun anymore. Now we won't have these conversations about Jim Harbaugh, you know, ruffling. I think that Jim Harbaugh is going to find another way to ruffle the feathers of coaches. I'm curious to know what that other way is going to be, Isaac. But
oh,
hey.
You know he will. Yeah, he'll find a way.
Right.
Like water.
He'll find a way, right.
But with Jim Harbaugh, I've got to say, I'm sad that this is over because I don't think, and that in retrospect, it was finding loophole. I don't see why this is a loophole, though. I don't know what makes this so horrendous that you have to ban it. We talked about this before, but the best recruits, and maybe this is me just repping my side of the country, but they're from the South, and that's just a fact. Because the South, it's warmer longer, you can practice longer, all of these multitudes of factors combined so that, basically, your top recruits year in, year out are from Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, somewhere like that. And Jim Harbaugh found a way to reach them with one of the best brands, one of the best promoted teams in college football. So I don't see why what he was doing was so wrong necessarily. And I don't know the exact rules. I don't know statute 1A, Roman numeral 3 of, you know, the college football recruiting laws. But I actually like the strategy, and I'm sad to see it go.
I am too. It's ridiculous to me. Because at the end of the day, when it comes to sports, as a head coach, your job is to win. You know what I mean? And again, I agree with you, Isaac. I think the best recruits, football recruits, come out of high schools in the South. I mean, you can play all year round. They're conditioned throughout the entire year. They have that luxury. And I think that the best recruits are from the South as well. So when you have those down South teams able to recruit those players directly because the campuses aren't that far, it does give schools like Alabama, schools like LSU, an advantage. So at the end of the day, if you saw Jim Harbaugh doing this, then hey, beef up, man up, start holding your own camps, you know, recruit harder. That's competition. That's what sports is all about. So, you know, when looking at it, you know, Harbaugh certainly got some backing when it comes to coaches within the Big Ten. I remember when Urban Meyer, you know, he had Jim Harbaugh's back and said, hey, I don't see any problem with it. But, you know, it's just one of those things. And I think it really hit a peak when, of course, you had the big dog out of all of them, Nick Saban, weighing in on it. Nick Saban had a problem with it, and I think the NCAA was like, all right, we may need to speed this up because one of our most prized guys in the game has a problem with this. You know what I mean? So it's ridiculous to me. I don't know why there's limitations on where you can go to recruit a kid. Come on, man.
Yeah,
I don't know.
A bunch of pandering to the established elites, because what happens is, you mentioned schools like LSU, Alabama, they started off with the advantage. Why do they get to reclaim that just because someone found a way to bypass these archaic laws which prevent them from recruiting the best players in the nation? That's stupid. Hats off to Harbaugh for making it work, but I'm sad to see it go.
I tell you, the NCAA. Oh, boy.
The
All
no
right.
fun league.
The no, yeah, I know.
Even
I thought,
though that's the NFL.
I thought the NFL was
a
no
both.
Fun league, but yeah, it's you can put them in the same conversation. All right, 2 minutes left here. Isaac, can we cue our Reflection Friday music, please? All right, really briefly here, Reflection Friday, where we reflect on the week that was in sports and bring you our favorite moments. My favorite moment had to be, without a doubt, bringing Gary Blanchard, MSU chemistry professor, to Current Sports TV to talk about concussions and the prototype that him and fellow professor Marcos Dantas has implemented in the MSU spring football camp to look at impacts and head injuries within the game on the gridiron. It's a conversation that we've had numerous times throughout our time during the show. And, you know, it comes to fruition on a day like today. DeBrickashaw Ferguson, he surprises everyone with his decision to retire. I don't know if you saw this, the New York Jets left tackle and former Pro Bowl player known for his remarkable durability. He is retiring at the age of 32. He made that announcement today due to that very thing, concussions and injuries within the game.
Shocking. Mine is just all of the NBA family reaching out to Craig Sager. Of course, this is a man who had cancer. Got through it and then was re-diagnosed, unfortunately. Steph Curry saying he's an inspiration. Dwayne Wade saying they love him. Congrats to Sager for a great career, and I hope he keeps trudging.
All right, folks, we'll be back at it next week. Same time, same place. Have a fantastic weekend. And as always, be easy, people.